The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. Continued. Disc 8. But Prof didn't seem worried. He talked to platoons of reporters, smiled at endless pictures, gave out statements, telling world he placed great confidence in Federated Nations and was sure our just claims would be recognized, and that he wanted to thank Friends of Free Luna for wonderful help in bringing true story of our small but sturdy nation before good people of Terra. F of FL being Stu. A professional public opinion firm, several thousand chronic petition signers, and a great stack of Hong Kong dollars. I had picture taken too, and tried to smile, but dodged questions by pointing to throat and croaking. In Agra, we were lodged in a lavish suite in a hotel that had once been palace of a Maharaja, and still belonged to him, even though India is supposed to be socialist. And interviews and picture-taking went on. Hardly dared get out of wheelchair, even to visit WC, as was under orders from Prof never to be photographed vertically. He was always either in bed or in a stretcher. Bed baths, bed pans, everything. Not only because safer, considering age, and easier for any loony, but also for pictures. His dimples and wonderful, gentle, persuasive personality were displayed in hundreds of millions of video screens, endless news pictures. But his personality did not get us anywhere in Agra. Prof was carried to office of President of Grand Assembly, me being pushed alongside, and there he attempted to present his credentials as ambassador to FN and prospective senator for Luna, was referred to Secretary General, and at his offices we were granted 10 minutes with the assistant secretary, who sucked teeth and said he could accept our credentials without prejudice and without implied commitment. They were referred to Credentials Committee, who sat on them. I got fidgety. Prof read Keats. Grain barges continued to arrive at Bombay. In a way, was not sorry about latter. When we flew from Bombay to Agra, we got up before dawn and were taken out to a field as city was waking. Every loony has his hole, whether luxury of a long-established home like Davis Tunnels or rock still raw from drill. Cubic is no problem and can't be for centuries. Bombay is bee swarms of people. Or over a million, was told, who have no home but some piece of pavement. A family might claim right and hand down by will, generation after generation, to sleep on a piece 2 meters long and one wide at a described location in front of a shop. Entire family sleeps on that space, meaning mother, father, kids, maybe a grandmother. Would not have believed it if had not seen. At dawn in Bombay, roadways, side pavements, even bridges are covered with tight carpet of human bodies. What do they do? Where do they work? How do they eat? Did not look as if they did. Could count ribs. If I hadn't believed simple arithmetic that you can't ship stuff downhill forever without shipping replacement back, would have tossed in cards. But, Tanstaffel, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, in Bombay or in Luna. At last we were given appointment with an investigating committee. Not what Prof had asked for. He had requested public hearing before Senate, complete with video cameras. Only camera at this session was its in-camera nature, was closed. Not too closed. I had little recorder, but no video. And took Prof 2 minutes to discover that committee was actually VIPs of Lunar Authority, or their tame dogs. Nevertheless, was chance to talk, and Prof treated them as if they had power to recognize Luna's independence and willingness to do so, while they treated us as a cross between naughty children and criminals up for sentencing. Prof was allowed to make opening statement. With decorations trimmed away, was assertion that Luna was de facto a sovereign state, with an unopposed government in being, a civil condition of peace and order, a provisional president and cabinet carrying unnecessary functions, but anxious to return to private life as soon as Congress completed writing a constitution. and that we were here to ask that these facts be recognized to jury, and that Luna be allowed to take her rightful place in councils of mankind as a member of Federated Nations. What Prof. Tolden bore a speaking acquaintance with truth, and they were not where they could spot discrepancies. Our provisional president was a computer, and cabinet was Weil, Finn, Comrade Clayton, and Terence Sheehan, editor of Pravda, plus Wolfgang Kosakov, board chairman of Lunohoco, and a director of Bank of Hong Kong and Luna. But Weil was only person now in Luna who knew that Adam Celine was false face for a computer. She had been terribly nervous at being left to hold fort alone. As it was, Adam's oddity in never being seen save for over video was always an embarrassment. We had done our best to turn it into a security necessity by opening offices for him in Cubic of Authority's Luna City office, and then exploding a small bomb. After this assassination attempt, comrades who had been most fretful about Adam's failure to stir around became loudest in demands that Adam must not take any chances, this being helped by editorials. But I wondered while Prof was talking what these pompous chums would think if they knew that our president was a collection of hardware owned by Authority. But they just sat staring with chill disapproval, unmoved by Prof's rhetoric. Probably best performance of his life, considering he delivered it flat on back, speaking into a microphone without notes, and hardly able to see his audience. Then they started in on us. Gentleman member from Argentina, never given their names, we weren't socially acceptable. This Argentino objected to phrase former warden in Prof's speech. That designation had been obsolete half a century. He insisted that it be struck out and proper title inserted. Protector of the Lunar Colonies by appointment of the Lunar Authority. Any other wording offended dignity of Lunar Authority. Prof asked to comment. Honorable Chairman permitted it. Prof said mildly that he accepted change since Authority was free to designate its servants in any fashion it pleased and was no intention to offend dignity of any agency of Federated Nations. But in view of functions of this office, former functions of this office, citizens of Luna Free State would probably go on thinking of it by traditional name. That made about six of them try to talk at once. Somebody objected to use of word Luna, and still more to Luna Free State. It was the moon, Earth's moon, a satellite of Earth and property of Federated Nations, just as Antarctica was. And these proceedings were a farce. Was inclined to agree with last point. Chairman asked gentleman member from North America to please be in order and to address his remarks through chair. Did chair understand from witness's last remark that this alleged de facto regime intended to interfere with consignee system? Prof fielded that and tossed it back. Honorable Chairman, I myself was a consignee. Now Luna is my beloved home. My colleague, the Honorable, the Undersecretary for Foreign Affairs, Colonel O'Kelly Davis. Myself, huh? Is Luna born, and proud of his descent from four transported grandparents. Luna has grown strong on your outcasts. Give us your poor, your wretched. We welcome them. Luna has room for them. Nearly 40 million square kilometers, an area greater than all Africa, and almost totally empty. More than that, since by our method of living we occupy not area but cubic, the mind cannot imagine the day when Luna would refuse another shipload of weary homeless. Chairman said, The witness is admonished to refrain from making speeches. The chair takes it that your oratory means that the group you represent agrees to accept prisoners as before? No, sir. What? Explain yourself. Once an immigrant sets foot on Luna today, he is a free man, no matter what his previous condition, free to go where he listeth. So, then what's to keep a consignee from walking across the field, climbing into another ship and returning here? I admit that I am puzzled at your apparent willingness to accept them. But we do not want them. It is our humane way of getting rid of incorrigibles who would otherwise have to be executed." Kutef told him several things that would stop what he pictured. He had obviously never been to Luna. As for incorrigibles, if really are, Luna eliminates such faster than Terra ever did. Back when I was very young, they sent us a gangster lord, from Los Angeles, I believe. He arrived with a squad of stooges, his bodyguards, and was cockily ready to take over Luna, as was rumored to have taken over a prison somewhere Earthside. None lasted 2 weeks. Gangster boss didn't make it to barracks. Hadn't listened when told how to wear a pea suit. "There is nothing to keep them from going home so far as we are concerned, sir," Prof answered. "Although your police here on Terra might cause him to think. But I have never heard of a consignee arriving with funds enough to buy a ticket home. Is this truly an issue? The ships are yours. Luna has no ships. And let me add that we are sorry that the ship scheduled for Luna this month was cancelled. I am not complaining that it forced on my colleague and myself." Prof stopped to smile. "A most informal method of travel. I simply hope that this does not represent policy. Luna has no quarrel with you. Your ships are welcome. Your trade is welcome. We are at peace and wish to stay so. Please note that all scheduled grain shipments have come through on time." Prof did always have gift for changing subject. They fiddled with minor matters then. Nosey from North America wanted to know what had really happened to the warden. He stopped himself. The protector. Senator Hobart. Prof answered that he had suffered a stroke. A coup is a stroke. And was no longer able to carry out his duties. But was in good health otherwise and receiving constant medical care. Prof added thoughtfully that he suspected that the old gentleman had been failing for some time in view of his indiscretions this past year, especially his many invasions of rights of free citizens, including ones who were not and never had been consignees. Story was not hard to swallow. When those busy scientists managed to break news of our coup, they had reported Warden as dead, whereas Mike had kept him alive and on job by impersonating him. When Authority Earthside demanded a report from Warden on this wild rumor, Mike had consulted Proof, then had accepted call and given a convincing imitation of senility, managing to deny, confirm, and confuse every detail. Our announcements followed, and thereafter Warden was no longer available, even in his computer alter ego. 3 days later, we declared independence. This North American wanted to know what reason they had to believe that one word of this was true. Prof smiled most saintly smile and made effort to spread thin hands before letting them fall to coverlet. "The gentleman member from North America is urged to go to Luna, visit Senator Hobart's sickbed, and see for himself. Indeed, all Terran citizens are invited to visit Luna at any time. See anything. We wish to be friends. We are at peace. We have nothing to hide. My only regret is that my country is unable to furnish transportation. For that, we must turn to you." Chinese member looked at Prof thoughtfully. He had not said a word but missed nothing. Chairman recessed hearing until 1500. They gave us a retiring room and sent in lunch. I wanted to talk, but Proof shook head, glanced around room, tapped ear. So, I shut up. Proof napped then, and I leveled out my wheelchair and joined him. On Terra, we both slept all we could. Helped. Not enough. They didn't wheel us back until 1600. Committee was already sitting. Chairman then broke on rule against speeches and made a long one, more in sorrow than anger. Started by reminding us that Luna Authority was a non-political trusteeship charged with solemn duty of ensuring that Earth satellite the Moon, Luna as some called it, was never used for military purposes. He told us that authority had guarded these sacred trusts more than a century, while governments fell and new governments rose. Alliances shifted and shifted again. Indeed, authority was older than Federated Nations, deriving original charter from an older international body. And so well had it kept that trust that it had lasted through wars and turmoils and realignments. This is news, but you see what he was building towards. The Lunar Authority cannot surrender its trust, he told us solemnly. However, there appears to be no insuperable obstacle to the Lunar colonists, if they show political maturity, enjoying a degree of autonomy. This can be taken under advisement. Much depends on your behaviour. The behaviour, I should say, of all you colonists. There have been riots and destruction of property. This must not be. I waited for him to mention 90 dead goons. He never did. I will never make a statesman. I don't have high-level approach. Destroyed property must be paid for, he went on. Commitments must be met. If this body you call a Congress can guarantee such things, it appears to this committee that this so-called Congress could, in time, be considered an agency of the authority for many internal matters. Indeed, it is conceivable that a stable local government might, in time, assume many duties now falling on the Protector, and even be allowed a delegate, non-voting, in the Grand Assembly. But such recognition would have to be earned. But one thing must be made clear. Earth's major satellite, the Moon, is by nature's law forever the joint property of all the peoples of Earth. It does not belong to that handful who by accident of history happen to live there. The sacred trust laid upon the Lunar Authority is, and forever must be, the supreme law of Earth's Moon. Accident of history? Huh? I expected Prof to shove it down his throat. I thought he would say, no, never did know what Prof would say. Here's what he did say. Prof waited through several seconds of silence, then said, Honorable Chairman, who is to be exiled this time? What did you say? Have you decided which one of you is to go into exile? Your deputy warden won't take the job. This was true. He preferred to stay alive. He is functioning now only because we have asked him to. If you persist in believing that we are not independent, then you must be planning to send up a new warden. Protector. Warden, let us not mince words. Though if we knew who he is to be, we might be happy to call him ambassador. We might be able to work with him. It might not be necessary to send him with armed hoodlums to rape and murder our women. Order! Order! The witness will come to order! It is not I who was not in order, Honorable Chairman. Rape it was, and murder most foul. But that is history, and now we must look to the future. Whom are you going to exile? Prof struggled to raise self on elbow, and I was suddenly alert. Was a cue. For you all know, sir, that it is a one-way trip. I was born here. You can see what effort it is for me to return even temporarily to the planet which has disinherited me. We are outcasts of Earth who... He collapsed. Was up out of my chair and collapsed myself, trying to reach him. Was not all play-acting, even though I answered a cue. It's terrible strain on heart to get up suddenly on Terra. Thick feel grabbed and smashed me to floor. 17. Neither of us was hurt, and it made juicy news breaks. For I put recording in Stu's hand, and he turned it over to his hired men. Nor were all headlines against us. Stu had recording cut, edited, and slanted. Authority to play odd man out? Lunar ambassador collapses under grilling. Outcasts, he cries. Prof. Paz points finger of shame. Story, page 8. Not all were good. Nearest to a favorable story in India was editorial in New India Times inquiring whether authority was risking bread of masses in failing to come to terms with lunar insurgents. was suggested that concessions could be made if would ensure increased grain deliveries, was filled with inflated statistics. Luna did not feed 100 million Hindus, unless you choose to think of our grain as making difference between malnutrition and starvation. On other hand, biggest New York paper opined that authority had made mistake in treating with us at all, since only thing convicts understood was taste of lash. Troops should land, set us in order, hang guilty, leave forces to keep order. Was a quick mutiny, quickly subdued, in Peace Dragoon's regiment from which our late oppressors had come. One started by rumor that they were to be shipped to Moon. Mutiny not hushed up perfectly. Stu hired good men. Next morning a message reached us inquiring if Professor De La Paz was well enough to resume discussions. We went, and committee supplied doctor and nurse to watch over Prof. But this time we were searched, and a recorder removed from my pouch. I surrendered it without much fuss. Was Japanese job supplied by Stu, to be surrendered. Number 6 arm has recess intended for a power pack, but near enough size of my mini recorder. Didn't need power that day, and most people, even hardened police officers, dislike to touch a prosthetic. Everything discussed day before was ignored, except that chairman started session by scolding us for breaking security of a closed meeting. Prof replied that it had not been closed so far as we were concerned, and that we would welcome newsmen, video cameras, a gallery, anyone, as Luna Free State had nothing to hide. Chairman replied stiffly that so-called Free State did not control these hearings. These sessions were closed, not to be discussed outside this room, and that it was so ordered. Proof looked at me. Will you help me, Colonel? I touched controls of chair, scooted around, was shoving his stretcher wagon with my chair toward door before Chairman realized bluff had been called. Prof allowed himself to be persuaded to stay without promising anything. Hard to coerce a man who faints if he gets overexcited. Chairman had said there had been many irrelevancies yesterday, and matters discussed best left undiscussed, and that he would permit no digressions today. He looked at Argentino, then at North American. He went on. Sovereignty is an abstract concept, one that has been redefined many times as mankind has learned to live in peace. We need not discuss it. The real question, Professor, or even Ambassador de facto, if you like, we shan't quibble, the real question is this. Are you prepared to guarantee that the lunar colonies will keep their commitments? What commitments, sir? All commitments, but I have in mind specifically your commitments concerning grain shipments. I know of no such commitments, sir, Prof answered with bland innocence. Chairman's hand tightened on gavel, but he answered quietly, Come, sir, there is no need to spar over words. I refer to the quota of grain shipments, and to the increased quota, a matter of 13% for this new fiscal year. Do we have your assurance that you will honour those commitments? This is a minimum basis for discussion. Else these talks can go no further. Then I am sorry to say, sir, that it would appear that our talks must cease. You aren't being serious. Quite serious, sir. The sovereignty of Free Luna is not the abstract matter you seem to feel it is. These commitments you speak of were the authority contracting with itself. My country is not bound by such. Any commitments from the sovereign nation I have the honor to represent are still to be negotiated.
Rabble, growled the North American. I told you were being too soft on them, jailbirds, thieves and whores. They don't understand decent treatment.
Order. Just remember I told you. If I had them in Colorado, we would teach them a thing or two. We know how to handle their sort.
The gentleman member will please be in order. I'm afraid, said Hindu member, Parsee, in fact, but committeeman from India. I'm afraid I must agree in essence with the gentleman member from the North American Directorate. India cannot accept the concept that the grain commitments are mere scraps of paper. Decent people do not play politics with hunger.
And besides,
the Argentino put in.
They breed like animals. Pigs.
Prof made me take a tranquilizing drug before that session. Had insisted on seeing me take it.
Prof said quietly,
Honorable Chairman, may I have consent to amplify my meaning before we conclude, perhaps too hastily, that these talks must be abandoned? Proceed. Unanimous consent, free of interruption?
Chairman looked around.
Consent is unanimous, he stated, and the gentlemen members are placed on notice that I will invoke Special Rule 14 at the next outburst. The sergeant-at-arms is directed to note this and act.
The witness will proceed.
I will be brief, Honorable Chairman.
Prof said something in Spanish. All I cut was Señor. Argentino turned dark but did not answer. Prof went on.
I must first answer the gentleman member from North America on a matter of personal privilege, since he has impugned my fellow countrymen. I, for one, have seen the inside of more than one jail. I accept the title. Nay, I glory in the title of jailbird. We citizens of Luna are jailbirds and descendants of jailbirds. But Luna herself is a stern schoolmistress. Those who have lived through her harsh lessons have no cause to feel ashamed. In Luna City, a man may leave purse unguarded or home unlocked and feel no fear. I wonder if this is true in Denver. As may be, I have no wish to visit Colorado to learn a thing or two. I am satisfied with what Mother Luna has taught me. And rabble we may be, but we are now a rabble in arms. To the gentleman member from India, let me say that we do not play politics with hunger. What we ask is an open discussion of facts of nature, unbound by political assumptions false to fact. If we can hold this discussion, I can promise to show a way in which Luna can continue grain shipments and expand them enormously to the great benefit of India.
Both Chinese and Indian looked alert.
Indian started to speak, checked himself, then said,
Honorable Chairman, will the chair ask the witness to explain what he means?
The witness is invited to amplify.
Honorable Chairman, gentlemen members, there is indeed a way for Luna to expand by tenfold, or even 100, her shipments to our hungry millions. The fact that grain barges continue to arrive on schedule during our time of trouble and are still arriving today is proof that our intentions are friendly. But you do not get milk by beating the cow. Discussions of how to augment our shipments must be based on the facts of nature, not on the false assumption that we are slaves, bound by a work quota we never made. So which shall it be? Will you persist in believing that we are slaves, indentured to an authority other than ourselves? Or will you acknowledge that we are free, negotiate with us, and learn how we can help you?
Chairman said,
In other words, you ask us to buy a pig in a poke. You demand that we legalize your outlaw status. Then you will talk about fantastic claims that you can increase grain shipments 10 or 100-fold. What you claim is impossible. I am an expert in lunar economics, and what you ask is impossible. It takes the Grand Assembly to admit a new nation.
Then place it before the Grand Assembly. Once seated as sovereign equals, we will discuss how to increase shipments and negotiate terms. Honorable Chairman, we grow the grain. We own it. We can grow far more, but not as slaves. Luna's sovereign freedom must first be recognized.
Impossible, and you know it. The Lunar Authority cannot abdicate its sacred responsibility.
Prof sighed. It appears to be an impasse. I can only suggest that these hearings be recessed while we all take thought. Today our barges are arriving, but the moment that I am forced to notify my government that I have failed, they will stop.
Prof. said sank back on pillow, as if it had been too much for him.
as may have been. I was doing well enough, but was young and had practice in how to visit Terra and stay alive. A loony his age should not risk it. After minor foo-foo raw, which Proof ignored, they loaded us into a lorry and scooted us back to hotel. Once underway, I said, "Prof, what was it you said to Signor Jellybelly that raised blood pressure?" He chuckled. "Comrade Stewart's investigations of these gentlemen turned up remarkable facts. I asked who owned a certain brothel off Calle Florida in B.A. these days, and did it now have a star redhead?" "Why? You used to patronize it?" I tried to imagine Prof in such. "Never. It has been 40 years since I was last in Buenos Aires. He owns that establishment, Manuel, through a dummy, and his wife, a beauty with tightened hair, once worked in it." Was sorry I'd asked. "Wasn't that a foul blow? And undiplomatic?" But Prof closed eyes and did not answer. He was recovered enough to spend an hour at the reception for newsmen that night, with white hair framed against a purple pillow and thin body decked out in embroidered pajamas. Looked like VIP corpse at an important funeral, except for eyes and dimples. I looked mighty VIP, too, in black and gold uniform, which Stu claimed was lunar diplomatic uniform of my rank. Could have been, if Luna had had such things. Did not, or I would have known. I prefer a pea suit. Color was tight. Nor did ever find out what decorations on it meant. A reporter asked me about one, based on Luna at Crescent as seen from Terra. Told him it was a prize for spelling. Stu was in earshot and said, "The canal is modest. The decoration is of the same rank as the Victoria Cross, and in his case was awarded for an act of gallantry on the glorious, tragic day of—" He led him away, still talking. Stu could lie standing up almost as well as Prof. Me, I had to think out the lie ahead of time. Indian newspapers and casts were rough that night. Threat to stop grain shipments made them froth. Gentilest proposal was to clean out Luna, exterminate us as criminal troglodytes, and replace us with honest Hindu peasants who understood sacredness of life and would ship grain and more grain. Prof picked that night to talk and give handouts about Luna's inability to continue shipments and why. And Stu's organization spread release throughout Terra. Some reporters took time to dig out sense of figures and tackle Prof on glaring discrepancies. "Professor De La Paz, here you say that grain shipments will dwindle away through failure of natural resources, and that by 2082, Luna won't be able to feed its own people. Yet earlier today you told the Lunar Authority that you could increase shipments 12 times or more." Prof said sweetly, "That committee is the Lunar Authority?" "Well, it's an open secret." "So it is, sir. But they have maintained the fiction of being an impartial investigating committee of the Grand Assembly. Don't you think they should disqualify themselves, so that we could receive a fair hearing?"
It's not my place to say, Professor. Let's get back to my question. How do you reconcile the two?"
"I'm interested in why it's not your place to say, sir. Isn't it the concern of every citizen of Terra to help avoid a situation which will produce war between Terra and her neighbor?"
"War? What in the world makes you speak of war, Professor?"
"Where else can it end, sir, if the Lunar Authority persists in its intransigence? We cannot accede to their demands. Those figures show why. If they will not see this, then they will attempt to subdue us by force, and we will fight back. Like cornered rats, for cornered we are, unable to retreat, unable to surrender. We do not choose war. We wish to live in peace with our neighbor planet, in peace and peacefully trade. But the choice is not ours. We are small. You are gigantic. I predict that the next move will be for the Lunar Authority to attempt to subdue Luna by force."
This peacekeeping agency will start the first interplanetary war.
A journalist frowned.
Aren't you overstating it? Let's assume that the Authority, or the Grand Assembly, as the Authority hasn't any warships of its own, let's suppose the nations of Earth decide to displace your, government. You might fight on Luna. I suppose you would. But that hardly constitutes interplanetary war. As you pointed out, Luna has no ships. To put it bluntly, you can't reach us.
I head chair close to Prof. Stretcher, listening. He turned to me. Tell him, Colonel. I parroted it. Prof and Mike had worked out stock situations. I had memorized and was ready with answers. I said, Do you gentlemen remember the Pathfinder? How she came plunging in out of control? They remembered. Nobody forgets greatest disaster of early days of spaceflight, when unlucky Pathfinder hit the Belgian village. We have no ships, I went on, but would be possible to throw these barge loads of grain instead of delivering them into parking orbit. Next day this evoked the headline, Loonies threatened to throw rice. At moment it produced awkward silence. Finally, journalist said, Nevertheless, I would like to know how you reconcile your two statements. No more grain after 2082, and 10 or 100 times as much.
There is no conflict, Prof answered. They are based on different sets of circumstances. The figures you have been looking at show the present circumstances, and the disaster they will produce in only a few years through drainage of Luna's natural resources. Disaster which these authority bureaucrats, or should I say authoritarian bureaucrats, would avert by telling us to stand in the corner like naughty children.
Prof paused for labored breathing, went on.
The circumstances under which we can continue, or greatly increase our grain shipments, are the obvious corollary of the first. As an old teacher, I can hardly refrain from classroom habits. The corollary should be left as an exercise for the student. Will someone attempt it?
Was uncomfortable silence. Then a little man with strange accent said slowly,
It sound to me as if you talk about a way to replenish natural resources.
Capital. Excellent. Prof flashed dimples. You, sir, will have a gold star on your term paper. To make grain requires water and plant foods. Phosphates, other things. Ask the experts. Send these things to us. We'll send them back as wholesale grain. Put down a hose in the limitless Indian Ocean. Line up those millions of cattle here in India. Collect their end product and ship it to us. Collect your own night soil. Don't bother to sterilize it. We've learned to do such things cheaply and easily. Send us briny seawater, rotten fish, dead animals, city sewage, cow manure, offal of any sort, and we will send it back, ton for ton, as golden grain. Send 10 times as much, we'll send back 10 times as much grain. Send us your poor, your dispossessed. Send them by thousands and hundreds of thousands. We'll teach them swift, efficient lunar methods of tunnel farming and ship you back unbelievable tonnage. Gentlemen, Luna is one enormous fallow farm, 4,000 million hectares, waiting to be plowed.
That startled them. Then someone said slowly,
But what do you get out of it? Luna, I mean.
Prof shrugged.
Money, in the form of trade goods. There are many things you make cheaply which are dear in Luna. Drugs, tools, book films, gods for our lovely ladies. Buy our grain, and you can sell to us at a happy profit.
A Hindu journalist looked thoughtful, started to write. Next to him was a European type who seemed unimpressed. He said,
Professor, have you any idea of the cost of shipping that much tonnage to the moon?
Prof waved it aside.
A technicality. Sir, there was a time when it was not simply expensive to ship goods across oceans, but impossible. Then it was expensive, difficult, dangerous. Today you sell goods half around your planet almost as cheaply as next door. Long-distance shipping is the least important factor in cost. Gentlemen, I am not an engineer, but I have learned this about engineers. When something must be done, engineers can find a way that is economically feasible. If you want the grain that we can grow, turn your engineers loose.
Prof gasped and labored, signaled for help, and nurses wheeled him away. I declined to be questioned on it, telling them that they must talk to Prof when he was well enough to see them. So they pecked at me on other lines. One man demanded to know why, since we paid no taxes, we colonists thought we had a right to run things our own way. After all, those colonies had been established by Federated Nations, by some of them. It had been terribly expensive. Earth had paid all bills. And now you colonists enjoy benefits and pay not one dime of taxes. Was that fair? I wanted to tell him to blow it. But Prof had again made me take a tranquilizer, and had required me to sort that endless list of answers to trick questions. Let's take that one at a time, I said. First, what is it you want us to pay taxes for? Tell me what I get, and perhaps I'll buy it. No, put it this way. Do you pay taxes?
Certainly I do, and so should you.
And what do you get for your taxes?
Huh? Taxes pay for government.
I said, excuse me, I'm ignorant. I live my whole life in Luna. I don't know much about your government. Can you feed it to me in small pieces? What do you get for your money? They all got interested, and anything this aggressive little chum missed, others supplied. I kept a list. When they stopped, I read it back. Free hospitals. Aren't any in Luna. Medical insurance. We have that, but apparently not what you mean by it. If a person wants insurance, he goes to a bookie and works out a bet. You can hedge anything for a price. I don't hedge my health. I'm healthy. Or was till I came here. We have a public library. One Carnegie Foundation started with a few book films. It gets along by charging fees. Public roads. I suppose that would be our tubes. But they are no more free than air is free. Sorry, you have free air here, don't you? I mean, our tubes were built by companies who put up money and are downright nasty about expecting it back, and then some. Public schools. There are schools in all Warrens, and I never heard of them turning away pupils, so I guess they are public. But they pay well, too, because anyone in Luna who knows something useful and is willing to teach it charges all the traffic will bear. I went on. Let's see what else. Social Security. I'm not sure what that is, but whatever it is, we don't have it. Pensions. You can buy a pension. Most people don't. Most families are large, and old people, say 100 and up, either fiddle along at something they like, or sit and watch video, or sleep. They sleep a lot, after, say, 120.
Sir, excuse me. Do people really live as long on the moon as they say?
I looked surprised, but wasn't. This was a stimulated question, for which an answer had been taped. Nobody knows how long a person will live in Luna. We haven't been there long enough. Our oldest citizens were born Earthside. It's no test. So far, no one born in Luna died of old age. But that's still no test. They haven't had time to grow old yet. Less than a century. But, take me, madam. How old would you say I am? I'm authentic Looney, third generation.
Truthfully, Colonel Davis, I was surprised at your youthfulness, for this mission, I mean. You appear to be about 22. Are you older? Not much, I fancy.
Madam, I regret that your local gravitation makes it impossible for me to bow. Thank you.
I've been married longer than that.
What? Oh, you're jesting.
Madam, I would never venture to guess a lady's age, but if you will emigrate to Luna, you will keep your present youthful loveliness much longer and add at least 20 years to your life. I looked at List. I'll lump the rest of this together by saying we don't have any of it in Luna, so I can't see any reason to pay taxes for it. On that other point, sir, surely you know that the initial cost of the colonies has long since been repaid several times over through grain shipments alone. We are being bled white of our most essential resources, and not even being paid an open market price. That's why the Lunar Authority is being stubborn. They intend to go on bleeding us. The idea that Luna has been an expense to Terra, and the investment must be recovered, is a lie, invented by the Authority to excuse their treating us as slaves. The truth is that Luna has not cost Terra one dime this century, and the original investment has long since been paid back. He tried to rally. Oh, surely you're not claiming that the lunar colonies have paid all the billions of dollars it took to develop spaceflight? I could present a good case. However, there is no excuse to charge that against us. You have spaceflight, you people of Terra. We do not. Luna has not one ship. So why should we pay for what we've never received? It's like the rest of this list. We don't get it. Why should we pay for it? Had been stalling, waiting for a claim that Prof had told me I was sure to hear, and got it at last.
Just a moment, please, came a confident voice. You ignored the two most important items on that list, police protection and armed forces. You boasted that you were willing to pay for what you get. So how about paying almost a century of back taxes for those two? It should be quite a bill, quite a bill.
He smiled smugly. Wanted to thank him. Thought Proof was going to chide me for failing to yank it out. People looked at each other and nodded. Pleased I had been scored on. Did best to look innocent. Please, don't understand. Luna has neither police nor armed forces.
You know what I mean. You enjoy the protection of the peace forces of the Federated Nations. And you do have police, paid for by the Lunar Authority. I know, to my certain knowledge, that two phalanges were sent to the moon less than a year ago to serve as policemen.
Oh, I sighed. Can you tell me how FN peace forces protect Luna? I did not know that any of your nations wanted to attack us. We are far away and have nothing anyone envies. Or did you mean we should pay them to leave us alone? If so, there is an old saying that once you pay Dengelt, you never get rid of the Dane. Sir, we will fight FN armed forces if we must. We shall never pay them. Now about those so-called policemen, they were not sent to protect us. Our Declaration of Independence told the true story about those hoodlums. Did your newspapers print it? Some had, some hadn't, depending on country. They went mad and started raping and murdering. And now they are dead. So don't send us any more troops. Was suddenly tired and had to leave. Really was tired.
Not much of an actor. And making that talk doc come out way Proof thought it should was strain.
18. Was not told till later that I had received an assist in that interview. Lead about police and armed forces had been fed by Stooge. Stu Lejoie took no chances. But by time I knew, I had had experience in handling interviews. We had them endlessly. Despite being tired, was not through that night. In addition to press, some Agra diplomatic corps had risked showing up. Few, and none officially, even from Chad. But we were curiosities, and they wanted to look at us. Only one was important, a Chinee. Was startled to see him. He was Chinese member of committee. I met him simply as Dr. Chan, and we pretended to be meeting first time. He was that Dr. Chan, who was then senator from Great China and also Great China's longtime number one boy in Lunar Authority, and much later, vice chairman and premier, shortly before his assassination.
After getting out point I was supposed to make, with bonus through others that could have waited, I guided Chair to bedroom, and was at once summoned to Proof's. Manuel, I'm sure you noticed our distinguished visitor from the Middle Kingdom. Old Chinee from committee? Try to curb the loony talk, son. Please don't use it at all here, even with me. Yes, he wants to know what we meant by tenfold or a hundredfold, so tell him. Straight or swindle? The straight. This man is no fool. Can you handle the technical details? Done my homework, unless he's expert in ballistics. He's not. But don't pretend to know anything you don't know, and don't assume that he's friendly. But he could be enormously helpful if he concludes that our interests and his coincide. But don't try to persuade him. He's in my study. Good luck. And remember, speak standard English. Dr. Chan stood up as I came in. I apologized for not standing. He said that he understood difficulties that a gentleman from Luna labored under here, and for me not to exert myself. Shook hands with himself and sat down. I'll skip some formalities. Did we or did we not have some specific solution when we claimed there was a cheap way to ship massive tonnage to Luna? Told him was a method. Expensive in investment but cheap in running expenses.
It's the one we use on Luna, sir. A catapult. An escape speed induction catapult.
His expression changed not at all.
Colonel, are you aware that such has been proposed many times and always rejected for what seemed good reasons? Something to do with air pressure?
Yes, Doctor. But we believe, based on extensive analysis by computer and our experience with catapulting, that today the problem can be solved. Two of our larger firms, the Lunoho Company and the Bank of Hong Kong in Luna, are ready to head a syndicate to do it as a private venture. They would need help here on Earth and might share voting stock, though they would prefer to sell bonds and retain control. Primarily, what they need is a concession from some government, a permanent easement on which to build the catapult. Probably India. Above was a set speech. Luno Hoko was bankrupt if anybody examined books, and Hong Kong Bank was strained, was acting as central bank for country undergoing upheaval. Purpose was to get in last word. India. Prophet coached me that this word must come last. Dr. Chan answered,
never mind financial aspects. Anything which is physically possible can always be made financially possible. Money is a bugaboo of small minds. Why do you select India?
Well, sir, India now consumes, I believe, over 90% of our grain shipments.
93.1%.
Yes, sir. India is deeply interested in our grain, so it seemed likely that she would cooperate. She could grant us land, make labor and materials available, and so forth. But I mentioned India because she holds a wide choice of possible sites. Very high mountains, not too far from Terra's equator. The latter is not essential, just helpful. But the site must be a high mountain. It's that air pressure you spoke of, or air density. The catapult head should be at as high altitude as feasible, but the ejection end, where the load travels over 11 kilometers per second, must be an air so thin that it approaches vacuum, which calls for a very high mountain. Take the peak Nanda Devi, around 400 kilometers from here. It has a railhead 60 kilometers from it, and they rolled almost to its base. It is 8,000 meters high. I don't know that Nanda Devi is ideal. It is simply a possible site with good logistics. The ideal site would have to be selected by Terran engineers.
A higher mountain would be better?
Oh, yes, sir. I assured him. A higher mountain would be preferred over one nearer the equator. The catapult can be designed to make up for loss in free ride from Earth's rotation. The difficult thing is to avoid so far as possible this pesky thick atmosphere. Excuse me, Doctor. I did not mean to criticize your planet.
There are higher mountains. Connor, tell me about this proposed catapult.
I started to. The length of an escape-speed catapult is determined by the acceleration. We think, or the computer calculates, that an acceleration of 20 gravities is about optimum. For Earth's escape speed, this requires a catapult 323 kilometers in length. Therefore...
Stop, please. Connor, are you seriously proposing to bore a hole over 300 kilometers deep?
Oh, no. Construction has to be above ground to permit shockwaves to expand. The stator would stretch nearly horizontally, rise perhaps 4 kilometers in 300, and in a straight line, almost straight, as Coriolis acceleration and other minor variables make it a gentle curve. The lunar catapult is straight so far as the eye can see, and so nearly horizontal that the barges just miss some peaks beyond it.
Oh, I thought that you were overestimating the capacity of present-day engineering. We drilled deeply today, not that deeply. Go on.
Doctor, it may be that common misconception which caused you to check me is why such a catapult has not been constructed before this. I've seen those earlier studies. Most assume that a catapult would be vertical, or that it would have to tilt up at the end to toss the spacecraft into the sky, and neither is feasible nor necessary. I suppose the assumption arose from the fact that your spaceships do boost straight up, or nearly. I went on. But they do that to get above atmosphere, not to get into orbit. Escape speed is not a vector quantity, it is scalar. A load bursting from a catapult at escape speed will not return to Earth no matter what its direction. Two corrections. It must not be headed toward the Earth itself, but at some part of the sky hemisphere. And it must have enough added velocity to punch through whatever atmosphere it still traverses. If it is headed in the right direction, it will wind up at Luna.
Ah, yes. Then this catapult could be used but once each lunar month?
No, sir. On the basis on which you were thinking, it would be once every day, picking the time to fit where Luna will be in her orbit. But in fact, or so the computer says, I'm not an astronautics expert. In fact, this catapult could be used almost any time, simply by varying ejection speed, and the orbits could still wind up at Luna.
I don't visualize that.
Neither do I, Doctor, but isn't there an exceptionally fine computer at Peiping University?
And if there is?
Did I detect an increase in bland inscrutability? A cyborg computer? Pickled brains? Are live ones aware? Horrible, either way. Why not ask a top-notch computer for all possible ejection times for such a catapult, as I have described? Some orbits go far outside Luna's orbit before returning to where they can be captured by Luna, taking a fantastically long time. Others hook around Terra, then go quite directly. Some are as simple as the ones we use from Luna. There are periods each day when short orbits may be selected.
But a load is in the catapult less than 1 minute.
The limitation is how fast the loads can be made ready. It is even possible to have more than one load going up the catapult at a time if the power is sufficient and computer control is versatile. The only thing that worries me is, these high mountains, they are covered with snow?
Usually, he answered. Ice and snow and bare rock.
Well, sir, being born in Luna, I don't know anything about snow. The stator would not only have to be rigid under heavy gravity of this planet, but would have to withstand dynamic thrusts at 20 gravities. I don't suppose it could be anchored to ice or snow.
Or could it be?
I'm not an engineer, Colonel, but it seems unlikely. Snow and ice would have to be removed and kept clear. Weather would be a problem, too.
Weather I know nothing about, Doctor.
All I know about ice is that it has a heat of crystallization of 335 million joules per ton.
I have no idea how many tons would have to be melted to clear the site, or how much energy would be required to keep it clear. But it seems to me that it might take as large a reactor to keep it free of ice as to power the catapult.
We can build reactors, we can melt ice. Our engineers can be sent north for re-education until they do understand ice.
Dr. Chen smiled, and I shivered.
However, the engineering of ice and snow was solved in Antarctica years ago.
Don't worry about it.
A clear solid rock site about 350 kilometers long at a high altitude. Anything else I should know?
Not much, sir. Melted ice could be collected near the catapult head and thus be the most massy part of what will be shipped to Luna. Quite the saving.
Also, the steel canisters would be reused to ship grain to Earth, thus stopping another drain that Luna can't take. No reason why a canister should not make the trip hundreds of times. At Luna, it would be much the way barges are now landed off Bombay. Solid-charge retro-rockets programmed by ground control. Except that it would be much cheaper. 2.5 kilometer seconds change of motion versus 11+, a squared factor of about 20. But actually even more favorable, as retros are parasitic weight, and the payload improves accordingly. There is even a way to improve that.
How?
Doctor, this is outside my specialty. But everybody knows that your best ships use hydrogen as reaction mass heated by a fusion reactor. But hydrogen is expensive in Luna, and any mass could be reaction mass. It just would not be as efficient. Can you visualize an enormous brute force space tug designed to fit lunar conditions? It would use raw rock, vaporized, as reaction mass, and would be designed to go up into parking orbit, pick up those shipments from Terra, bring them down to Luna's surface. It would be ugly, all the fancy stripped away. Might not be manned even by a cyborg. It can be piloted from the ground by computer.
Yes, I suppose such a ship could be designed. But let's not complicate things. Have you covered the essentials about this catapult?
I believe so, Doctor. The site is the crucial thing. Take the peak Nanda Devi. By the maps I have seen, it appears to have a long, very high ridge sloping to the west for about the length of our catapult. If that is true, it would be ideal. Less to cut away, less to bridge. I don't mean that it is the ideal site, but that is the sort to look for. A very high peak with a long, long ridge west of it.
I understand.
Dr. Chen left abruptly. Next few weeks, I repeated that in a dozen countries, always in private, and with the implication that it was secret. All that changed was name of mountain. In Ecuador, I pointed out that Chimborazo was almost on equator. Ideal. But in Argentina, I emphasized that their Aconcagua was highest peak in Western Hemisphere. In Bolivia, I noted that Alto Plano was as high as Tibetan Plateau. Almost true. Much nearer equator, and offered a wide choice of sites for easy construction leading up to peaks comparable to any on Terra. I talked to a North American who was a political opponent of that Chum who had called us rabble. I pointed out that, while Mount McKinley was comparable to anything in Asia or South America, there was much to be said for Mauna Loa, extreme ease of construction. Doubling G's to make it short enough to fit, and Hawaii could be spaceport of world. Whole world. For we talked about day when Mars would be exploited, and freight for 3, possibly 4 planets would channel through their big island. Never mentioned Mauna Loa's volcanic nature. Instead, I noted the location permitted an aborted load to splash harmlessly into Pacific Ocean. In Soviet Union, was only one peak discussed. Lenin, over 7,000 meters, and rather too close to their big neighbor. Kilimanjaro, Popocatépetl, Logan, El Libertado. My favorite peak changed by country. All that we required was that it might be highest mountain in hearts of locals. I found something good to say about modest mountains of Chad when we were entertained there, and rationalized so well I almost believed it. Other times, with help of leading questions from Stu Lajoie's stooges, I talked about chemical engineering,
of which I know nothing but had memorized facts, on surface of Luna, where endless free vacuum and sun power and limitless raw materials and predictable conditions permitted ways of processing expensive or impossible Earthside. When they arrived, that cheap shipping both ways made it profitable to exploit Luna's virgin resources. Was always the suggestion that entrenched bureaucracy of lunar authority had failed to see great potential of Luna. True. Plus answer to a question always asked, which answer asserted that Luna could accept any number of colonists. This also was true, although never mentioned that Luna, yes, that sometimes Luna's loonies, killed about half of new chums. But people we talked to rarely thought of immigrating themselves. They thought of forcing or persuading others to emigrate to relieve crowding and to reduce their own taxes. Kept mouth shut about fact that half-fed swarms we saw everywhere did breed faster than even catapulting could offset. We could not house, feed, and train even a million new chums each year, and a million wasn't a drop on Terra. More babies than that were conceived every night. We could accept far more than would emigrate voluntarily, but if they used forced immigration and flooded us, Luna has only one way to deal with a new chum. Either he makes not one fatal mistake in personal behavior or in coping with environment that will bite without warning, or he winds up as fertilizer in a tunnel farm. All that immigration in huge numbers would mean would be that a larger percentage of immigrants would die, too few of us to help them pass natural hazards. However, Proof did most talking about Luna's great future. I talked about catapults. During weeks we waited for committee to recall us, we covered much ground. Stu's men had things set up, and only question was how much we could take. We would guess that every week on Terra chopped a year off our lives, maybe more for Prof. But he never complained, and was always ready to be charming at one more reception. We spent extra time in North America, date of our Declaration of Independence, exactly 300 years after that of North American British colonies, turned out to be wizard propaganda, and Stu's manipulators made most of it. North Americans are sentimental about their United States, even though it ceased to mean anything once their continent had been rationalized by FN. They elect a president every 8 years. Why? Could not say. Why do British still have queen? And boast of being sovereign. Sovereign, like love, means anything you want it to mean. It's a word in dictionary between sober and suzzled. Sovereignty meant much in North America, and 4th of July was a magic date. 4th of July League handled our appearances, and Stu told us that it had not cost much to get it moving, and nothing to keep going. League even raised money used elsewhere. North Americans enjoy giving no matter who gets it. Farther south, Stu used another date. His people planted idea that coup d'etat had been 5 May instead of 2 weeks later. We were greeted with Cinco de Mayo, Libertad, Cinco de Mayo. I thought they were saying thank you. Proof did all talking. But in 4th of July country, I did better. Stu had me quit wearing a left arm in public. Sleeves of my costumes were sewn up so that stump could not be missed, and word was passed that I had lost it fighting for freedom. Whenever I was asked about it, all I did was smile and say, "See what comes of biting nails?" Then change subject. I never liked North America, even first trip. It is not most crowded part of Terra. Has a mere billion people. In Bombay, they sprawl on pavements. In Great New York, they pack them vertically. Not sure anyone sleeps. Was glad to be in invalid's chair. It's mixed up place another way. They care about skin color, by making point of how they don't care. First trip I was always too light or too dark, and somehow blamed either way, and was always being expected to take stand on things I have no opinions on. Bog knows I don't know what genes I have. One grandmother came from a part of Asia where invaders passed through as regularly as locusts, raping as they went. Why not ask her?
Learned to handle it by my second makey learny, but it left a sour taste. I think I prefer a place as openly racist as India, where if you aren't Hindu, you're nobody. Except that Parsis look down on Hindus, and vice versa. However, I never really had to cope with North America's reverse racism when being Colonel O'Kelly Davis, hero of lunar freedom. We had swarms of bleeding hearts around us, anxious to help. I let them do two things for me, things I had never had time, money, or energy for as a student. I saw Yankees play and visited Salem. Should have kept my illusions. Baseball is better over video. You can really see it and aren't pushed in by 200,000 other people. Besides, somebody should have shot that outfield. I spent most of that game dreading moment when they would have to get my chair out through crowd. That, and assuring host that I was having a wonderful time. Salem was just a place, no worse and no better than rest of Boston. After seeing it, I suspected that they had hanged the wrong witches. But day wasn't wasted. I was filmed laying a wreath on a place where a bridge had been in another part of Boston. Concord. And made a memorized speech. Bridge is still there, actually. You can see it, down through glass. Not much of a bridge.
This book is continued on Disc 9.